The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Nothing perfect or considered, but we're so damn good. It's the story of your life. You're moving down the page, and you know you're on your way. The story of your life. You live it every day. You can run, you run, but you won't get away. No one knows what's coming up.
Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt. I begin the show with the very sad news that United States Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick died last night at 9:30 p.m. He had been attacked by a rioter on Wednesday, hit in the head with a fire extinguisher, passed away last night. That brings to 5 the total number of people who were killed in the takeover of the Capitol. 3 of them from medical emergencies unattended. One by being shot by a Capitol Hill police officer, and of course, the police officer hit with the fire hydrant, fire extinguisher. That's murder. That makes everyone in the mob an accomplice to murder. And I believe, I'm certain the U.S. attorney, it's all a federal crime. It's all terrorism and insurrection, but it became felony murder last night. And I'm just telling you, everybody involved had better find, turn themselves into the FBI. Call them up and say, I was there, I was inside the Capitol, how can I cooperate? That's what people ought to do. The President of the United States made a statement yesterday, long overdue, but better late than never, cut number 2.
I would like to begin by addressing the heinous attack on the United States Capitol. Like all Americans, I am outraged by the violence, lawlessness, and mayhem. I immediately deployed the National Guard and federal law enforcement to secure the building and expel the intruders. America is and must always be a nation of law and order. The demonstrators who infiltrated the Capitol have defiled the seat of American democracy. To those who engaged in the acts of violence and destruction, you do not represent our country. And to those who broke the law, you will pay. We have just been through an intense election, and emotions are high. But now tempers must be cooled and calm restored. We must get on with the business of America. My campaign vigorously pursued every legal avenue to contest the election results. My only goal was to ensure the integrity of the vote. In so doing, I was fighting to defend American democracy. I continue to strongly believe that we must reform our election laws to verify the identity and eligibility of all voters, and to ensure faith and confidence in all future elections. Now Congress has certified the results. A new administration will be inaugurated on January 20th. My focus now turns to ensuring a smooth, orderly, and seamless transition of power. This moment calls for healing and reconciliation. 2020 has been a challenging time for our people. A menacing pandemic has upended the lives of our citizens, isolated millions in their homes, damaged our economy, and claimed countless lives. Defeating this pandemic and rebuilding the greatest economy on earth will require all of us working together. It will require a renewed emphasis on the civic values of patriotism, faith, charity, community, and family. We must revitalize the sacred bonds of love and loyalty that bind us together as one national family. to the citizens of our country, serving as your president has been the honor of my lifetime. And to all of my wonderful supporters, I know you are disappointed, but I also want you to know that our incredible journey is only just beginning. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
That was the president. I also want you to hear General Colin Powell, former Secretary of State Colin Powell, with Wolf Blitzer yesterday, cut number six.
They're watching with great interest, and they can't believe we have done this to ourselves. So that's the gift for Mr. Putin, who I know quite well. You know, we'd like to pick on them and say they're doing things wrong or bad or they're not good. And suddenly they're looking at the United States of America. And we got people running all through our Capitol building. I've never seen them run through the Capitol buildings of the Russian Federation. And so they're just smiling and saying, see, the Americans are not as big and bad as they'd like to make themselves out to be. But they're going to be surprised. They're going to discover that we're going to rebound rather quickly. I believe that once we settle this problem of these people who are out there and whatever they came from, arrest them, put them in jail, or run them off, but clean out the place. And once we settle down, and I frankly, once Mr. Trump is no longer the president of the United States of America, and we have other people in the government, and we have a new president, I think things will settle down quickly. The big problem that I have with all of this is that where was the Congress in all of this? In all of the things that we have been doing, the Congress just went along with Mr. Trump. Usually it was just the Republican side. But there were some things we did that showed that the Congress was not ready to do its duty. All of these things that have come up, let's deploy forces here, let's put forces there, let's make the budget this high, let's make the budget that low. This is congressional duty business. In my years in the military, in my years as National Security Advisor and as Secretary of State, I welcomed Congress challenging me for what I was doing. That's what they're supposed to do, and that's what I'm supposed to listen to. What should I be doing? What do you think I should be doing? And I would debate the Congress, and I would argue with them. And we settled out the arguments after discussing them. But that doesn't happen now. We've got an extremely weak cabinet. It's getting weaker by the day. They're walking out now. And they did not challenge the president. You saw the movie or the television piece last week with the argument that the president was having with some people. And they told him the truth. But he didn't want to hear the truth. He said, no, I'm not buying that. We would never have seen something like that during my days in government. When we went in to see President Bush, the Gang of Eight, we called ourselves, the Group of Eight. It was me and Mr. Cheney, my boss, and the Secretary of State Baker. It was a great group. But we were free to talk. And I've told this story many, many times. You know, Mr. Cheney was my boss. I was just the chairman. I had no authority in that room. But Cheney would give the position of the Department of Defense to President Bush. Mr. President, this is the decision that we make. This is what we recommend to you. And then he would pause and say, but Colin doesn't agree with me on everything. Colin, tell the president what you think. And I would. And that's the kind of organization we had. We all chipped in. We all contributed our viewpoint. And not to have that kind of a government is to have the weakest possible government possible. Will you not allow people to come in and talk openly before the president of the United States? And Bush would just sit there and listen to it. And then when he had heard it all, he was ready to make a decision. He made the decision. We executed that decision. That's gone. I don't know where it went, but it's gone. And there is not a cabinet now that understands this as well as they should. And they're not doing the job they're supposed to be doing.
Is it going to come back in the new administration?
Well, we're going to have a new administration, and it's going to be a president who has experience at that level as a politician. And I have great confidence in Joe. I know him quite well. We've done a lot together. We've raced our Corvettes together. And I think he is the kind of individual who will understand these issues and will approach them with a genuine approach where he wants to hear what people think.
That is the case. The tone-deaf part there is we raced our Corvettes together. And I think people who are watching now, not a lot of conservatives watch CNN anymore, but if they were watching people in middle America, we raced our Corvettes together, is not going to resonate. I want to cover the market quickly. Birch Gold sponsors this because yesterday was an interesting day. If you haven't bought gold, you need to buy it. We are in for turbulent times, inflationary times. 10% of your retirement portfolio at a minimum, not more than 25%, should be in precious metals. Birch Gold can be reached at HughGold.com, or you can text my name, Hugh, to 474747. You can buy American Eagles or Canadian Maple Leafs directly from Birch Gold. Again, text Hugh to 474747, or they can help you move a portion of your IRA or 401k into a physical precious metals, not gold mines, not ETFs, but the actual real deal that they bank and they vault for you. They take care of it for you. The Dow went up 211 points yesterday. The NASDAQ went up 326 points. The NASDAQ went up 26 points. That NASDAQ was up 2.5%. And everything is green again this morning. Gold is down a bit to 1891, which is an excellent entry point in my view. The 10-year Treasury is up to 1.07. As the market looks forward past the terrible events of this week to what they expect to be a very, very loose fiscal policy in the new administration. So if you're afraid of inflation, go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. You can trust Birch Gold, and you can be right back here after the break. It's Hugh Hewitt. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start, so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384. Joined now by the poet laureate of the Hugh Hewitt Show, Tarzana Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Q. You know, a couple of weeks ago, you may remember, I accused myself of Cassandraing when I said in a poem that I didn't think all of this was going to work out well. And
a very memorable moment in the departure from the King's English, but perhaps there is a sequel.
Yes. I've often said that poets can see the future well, but if we are Cassandras, only time will tell. We know the past is prologue, and we feel the present's pain. So when our bunions spasm, you can bet it's going to rain. But making this prediction didn't take much skill at all. I'm not the only one who saw the writing on the wall. I'm sure the House and Senate, where such things are debated, heard their email, had their email overwhelmed and switchboards inundated. The lack of preparation for the doings of some devils signals gross incompetence on many different levels. MAGA should have made it clear exactly what was planned and disavowed well in advance some Custer-like last stand. And those who claim to be in charge, the adults in the room, should have seen their stimulus was packed with pork and doom. Although they move in limousines, the people have been caged. Take away what's left of hope, no wonder they're enraged. I'm not a whataboutist. I feel such talk is shameless. But no one in this country should think that they are blameless. So there, good friends, you have it. I've had my little say. My plan and my prediction? I think we ought to pray. That's Cassandra 2 by Tarzana Joe.
And ending Cassandra 2 with an admonition always timely and useful, Joe. Is the new year open for business at TarzanaJoe.com?
Yeah, we press forward. Okay.
All poetry needs can be filled by writing Joe at TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com. TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Hugh.
I want to let people know I've got coming up Ben Sasse at the bottom of the hour, Senator Sasse from Nebraska. I have former Governor Chris Christie coming up next hour. I've also got Peter Baker of the New York Times and Jonathan Swan of Axios, and then Dr. Larry Arn of Hillsdale College. will be along to discuss the week's events in our number three. Let me play for you Marco Rubio yesterday, cut number one.
Look, I don't understand these guys. I saw Joe Biden's speech today, okay? It was an opportunity for him to sort of, at this moment, the day after all of that, sort of calm things down. And instead, he goes off for 20 minutes and talks about everything that happened last summer. And if this was black protesters, the police would have responded differently. The police, they showed tremendous restraint yesterday. That's why potentially one of them is, we know now, is dead. Maybe that's why or whatever. But the point being is that there was no need for that. You know what that does? That makes everybody bow up and go back to their corner. Everybody's outraged by what happened yesterday. A lot of people are thinking to themselves, maybe politics has gotten too hot right now. And then you come out with a speech like that. And I don't think that does any good for anybody. I'm really disappointed in Biden's speech today. I expected more and better.
Many people did. I'll ask Senator Sasse about that, as well as the move for impeachment. A number of people, the New York Washington Post has a story by Ann Guerin and Mike DeBonis, calls intensify to remove Trump from office, even as he acknowledges a new administration. I played the president's statement for you, but indeed, Chuck Schumer called for it yesterday, as did Nancy Pelosi. And the Joe Biden speech that the senator referred to, I will play sometime next hour. Let me advance now to this segment, relieffactor.com, as I will be talking with Senator Sasse next segment. I take it every day, and I encourage all of you to be working out the stress. Get out there, walk, run, exercise, Peloton, do whatever you do. Don't sit in your chair and read Twitter all day to reinforce your point of view. Don't watch the cable network. Just don't get mad and sit around. Get outside and work out and take your relieffactor.com. Hey, Karen and Kirkman, resveratrol omega, and it goes best with lukewarm coffee, which I just took it. I take it every day, and I tell you every day that exercise and aging inevitably produce aches and pains. I can tell you on both counts that's true. And the only thing to do is really to take the supplement that matters, Relief Factors. I carry in Kirkman, resveratrol omega. Doctors recommend them. Perfectly calibrated, perfectly designed, to easy to swallow, easy to take in the morning. Remind you, take it in the first hour. I remind you two more times, don't leave home without it. Don't go into your weekend warrior mode without it. ReliefFactor.com. Also want to say to all of you, HonorBoundCoffee.com. That's where you should be getting your brew, because every dollar of profits from HonorBoundCoffee.com goes to support the men and women in uniform and their families through charities devoted to the service of those who are serving us. HonorBoundCoffee.com. I'll be right back with Ben Sasse on the You Do It Show. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt. We are standing by waiting Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse. The Washington Post this morning reports by Ann Guerin and Mike DeBonis, calls intensify to remove Trump from office even as he acknowledges a new administration. President Trump promised a smooth transition in a video message, which I've already played for you this morning, posted on Twitter Thursday night, saying that his supporters had pursued post-election challenges in good faith, but now, quote, tempers must be cooled and calm restored. Trump's comments are the closest he has come to acknowledging his loss, and they follow escalating calls for his removal, coming hours after the nation's top congressional Democrats demanded he be removed from office for his role in the deadly sacking of the U.S. Capitol by a pro-Trump mob. I've already told you that late last night, a member of the Capitol Police died. I'm joined now by Senator Sasse. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Hugh.
What is your assessment of the president's intention and his culpability for the insurrectionists and the rioters breaking into the Capitol and murdering a Capitol policeman?
Well, the People's Capitol, which is obviously the greatest symbol around the world of freedom and liberty and self-government, there's polling all over the world that the dome of the Capitol is literally the most identifiable symbol of freedom. And it was ransacked by a mob that was incited by the President of the United States. While blood was actually being shed in the Capitol, and I was in the Senate chamber, and the Secret Service was trying to rush the Vice President to safety. At those exact moments, the President is rage tweeting against the Vice President. Why? Because Vice President Pence had the audacity to fulfill his oath of office to the Constitution. It's a big deal. Lies have consequences.
Now, I'm curious about the word incite. It has a legal meaning. I know you're not a lawyer, but incite means to act with the purposeful intention to cause. That's why I asked you the question I did. Do you think he intended the mob to break into the Congress?
You are right that I am not a lawyer, so there's probably 15 sub-definitions of incite. But the president had a rally hours before this happened where he is telling them to go to the Capitol and to go wild. This is a part of a pattern. The guy is addicted to division. This is a deep brokenness in his soul. You and I have talked about it multiple times. Donald Trump is a guy who hurts, and I hurt for him at an anthropological and a human level, but at a level of his oath of office to the Constitution. The duty of the President of the United States is to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. And the President is addicted to social media and to television and to division. And he's been lying to the American people for 8 straight weeks and planned it long before. No matter what was happening in any state, he was going to say the election was being stolen and the people needed to rise up.
So, Senator,
morning, he said repeatedly to go wild when you get to the Capitol. They went to the Capitol and some went wild. Now, let's be clear here. There are 30,000 people here. The vast majority of them are honorable, freedom-loving people. The vast majority of them, but not all of them.
Do you – I got to land the plane, though, Senator. Do you think he intended for the riot and the occupation, the insurrection, to happen?
I think Donald Trump wanted there to be massive division, and he was telling people there was a path by which he was going to stay in office after January 20th. That was never true. And he wanted chaos on television. I don't have any idea what was in his heart about what he wanted to happen once they were in the Capitol. But he wanted there to be chaos. And I'm sure you've also had conversations with other senior White House officials, as I have.
I have.
As this was unfolding on television, Donald Trump was walking around the White House confused about why other people on his team weren't as excited as he was, as you had rioters pushing against Capitol Police trying to get into the building.
That said,
it was happening. He was delighted.
That said, should he be impeached and removed?
I think that there are a lot of questions that we need to get to the bottom of about why the National Guard was not deployed. Why was it delayed? So that's what I've been working on last night and this morning. I want to understand more about why the National Guard wasn't deployed when there had been clear calls for it, and then why that delay happened. So there are more things that I need to understand before I get to a conclusory judgment about that. But I think the question of was the president derelict in his duty, that's not an open question. He was.
Now, you know that the history of the Roman Revolution from 60 BC to Augustus Caesar is a progressive cycle of iterations away from the norm. A rushed impeachment would be yet another iteration away from the norm. Would that not itself be terribly damaging?
So I think you raise a really good point, and it's why I think there's a distinction between the objective question of was the president derelict and the prudential judgment of what is the best way to take America forward. Donald Trump's not going to be in office in 13, 14 days, whatever the right count is. I don't care much, again, at a human level. I've built a relationship with the president as we had to work together over the last 4 years, and I'm sad for much of who Donald Trump is. But I don't really care at the level of American constitutional health where Donald Trump is in 2023. I do care a lot about where the American people are. And there are many, many, many great Americans who voted for Donald Trump because they didn't like the alternatives. They didn't like Hillary Clinton in 2016. They didn't like the failure of so many, not all, but so many in the Democratic Party to push back against AOC's agenda to drive the Democratic Party further to the left. So I didn't vote for Donald Trump, but I understand why lots of people did in my state and across the country. And what I want us to be doing is moving forward with 85, 90, and 95% of the people wanting to reaffirm a constitutional system of checks and balances, where you don't have the Article II leader trying to incite action against the Article I branch in the People's House. And so I am with you that the prudential questions about what's good for the American people in 2023 and 2033, those should be the most important questions right now.
Do you want members of the cabinet to resign in protest? And if so, who?
I would say that I've had conversations for 4 years straight with members of the cabinet who see behavior that they regard as not just morally disgusting, though that, but just totally confusing about an adult who's supposed to be shepherding this great gift that we've inherited as the constitutional system, that we pass it on to our kids. And many people have asked my advice over 3.5 years about whether or not they should stay or resign. typically my advice has been to stay, that the administration has done many, many wonderful things. You and I have talked about it. Some of the things that Mike Pompeo has been doing over the course of the last couple of years, really exceptionally good work. And so there are a number of members of the cabinet who've done good work at the level of policy implementation. And there have been a lot of people in the senior White House staff and in the cabinet who've also done very good work in restraining some moments when Donald Trump was inclined to do some really crazy stuff. And so in general, I've urged people to stay and to try to do the best they can. You're not serving the man. You're serving the American people by serving that office. Right now, I have a couple of other conversations going, so I don't want to discuss those in this context. But in general, my advice has been to people to stay and serve the American people through their callings and in that office. Again, when you work, when you take an oath of office as a cabinet official, you're taking the oath not to a man. You know, the crap we saw at the Capitol where a United States flag at one point came down and a Trump flag went up instead, that's not what people are taking an oath to. They're taking an oath to the flag of the United States that people for 240 years have bled and died to protect. And when they take that oath and serve in the Article II branch, they're doing it under the authority of the person who's the chief executive, the presider, which is what the word, as you know, president is supposed to mean. It's not supposed to be a kingly title. They're not doing it to a man. They're doing it to the American people in the office. And so in general, I think the right choice is for people to serve stability.
So that's the cabinet. There are three key staff members, the chief of staff, the White House counsel, and the national security advisor. Do you want those three to stay and serve through the transition?
I think all three of those, I can't remember if you said White House counsel or not, but I would
add
them to your list. Okay. I think all of those, American people would be best served by them staying in their offices.
Rona McDaniel is likely to be elected unopposed to a third term of the RNC today. She's a Trump selection. Do they need a new chair? Tommy Hicks, by the way, is co-chair running for re-election, but he has challengers. What is your advice to the Republican National Committee about both of those offices?
The Republican National Committee is not a healthy organization. As you know, in the 2016 campaign, I campaigned for almost everybody not named Donald Trump, and it became pretty clear that the RNC as a structure was, akin to a fueled-up 747 sitting on a runway that could be hijacked by almost anybody with a big brand. And that's what happened. And I've made it pretty clear that I think it's pretty dangerous for the party of Lincoln and Reagan to become a party of, a lot of QAnon nonsense and a lot of TV obsession and a lot of narcissistic trolling. Our party needs to be bigger than one personality. And I hope that the Republican National Committee is thinking hard about how we serve our kids by trying to put forward an argument that can speak to 70% and, frankly, that could speak to 90% of America. And right now we don't do that. I mean,
do you want a clean sweep in Georgia? Do you want a clean sweep of the RNC?
You know, the RNC doesn't ask my advice on how to govern the place. There is a lot of yes man and yes womanism inside the RNC. It's not a place that's primarily about ideas right now. It's been a cult of personality for some time, and they don't ask my advice. So I'm not going to comment on a specific election there, but I think the RNC needs to have lots and lots of change. We need to be making a case why we want to be the party of gratitude, not the party of grievance. You know, America isn't a tribal war forever. And if you listen to most of the crap that comes out of the RNC, these are a bunch of people obsessed with whatever some random Democrat said that day, and they want to scream about it.
But Senator, I want to move to the other end of the spectrum. Steve
sure.
Schmidt, who is the leader of the Lincoln Project, has planned, quote, a brutal campaign against companies, trade associations, CEOs that, quote, serve as financiers of the authoritarian movement that attacked the U.S. Capitol. It's a time for choosing. It's America or autocracy. There's going to be a public discussion about it. Of course, Stephen Schmidt of the McCain campaign has selected Sarah Palin to be his vice president. What do you make of the Lincoln Project's sort of anti-Trumpism? Is it opportunism or is it principle?
I think there's an insane amount of money that's been made by people laundering Republican or formerly Republican brands to raise money from Democrats and for Democratic causes. So I don't spend a lot of time on the Lincoln Project, but I think a lot of the work they've done is very, very sad, very destructive. But again, I think the more important thing than me complaining about the Lincoln Project is talking about the party of Lincoln and who we want to be. America doesn't work if we're going to hate each other. America can't do big things if we just talk about how much we hate each other. I'm the third or fourth most conservative member of the Senate by policy, voting record, but I'm just not that partisan because I care more about my neighbors than I care about people in D.C. who live on social media to attack the other party. It's not very many of Americans who really care about that crap.
People think it was a cliche when I quoted Lincoln, we must not be enemies, we must be friends, we must not be enemies, but amen. It's not cliche.
It's not cliche. People call me naive for saying I'm still optimistic about America. Fine, call me naive. Politics has enough cynics. At the end of this rot, we got to love our neighbor. I mean, the point of America is about coming together to reaffirm a constitutional system. Why? Is the Constitution the end? No, the Constitution is a means. It's Washington's silver frame to get to the golden apple at the middle, which is the communities where we work and where we raise kids and where we worship and where we love.
Which is freedom.
Where you build stuff, which is freedom from, so that freedom to. Government gets us freedom from. Government isn't the end. Government gets us freedom from, so we can get to freedom to actually build crap with the people God has called us to live next to and next door to and to break bread with.
So I have to close, though, Senator, by asking you about the cycle, which began in 2016 with cable's wall-to-wall coverage of the president and with James Comey and Andrew McCabe's decision to investigate the president without telling him. It proceeded through Mr. Mueller and the Steele dossier. It's proceeded through a faux impeachment, now being debated a real impeachment. And TDS enraged pundits on various cable channels talking with complete Trump apologists on various cable channels. There is a lot to go around here. What is your assessment of everything?
So all that you said is true, Hugh. I agree with all of it. And yet we should also recognize that the number of Americans that are paying attention to the stories that are on cable every day, less than 14%. Less than 14% of the American people are watching politics on a daily basis. 86% of our neighbors say, I don't want that crap to be the center of my consciousness. Politics is not meant to be constant horse race substitutes for sports, for the Buckeyes and the Indians and the Browns. I mean, the reality is the places where people live should do their work by being an engaged citizen for 10 to 30 minutes a day so they can get back to coaching Little League. Like, you're right. The rage crap of lots of MSNBC, the sort of capitulation of the New York Times editorial page to the progressive woke mob, it's really gross. But at the end of the day, MSNBC has 1.8 million viewers? It's like 0.5% of America.
I mean, so let me go, Senator,
you're saying
to
something that's true, but we have to be for something before we're just against all that crap. And right now under Donald Trump, my party hasn't been for very much. It's just been against.
My very last question, Senator, I heard from a lot of callers yesterday. They want to do whataboutism, but that's really an appeal for one standard, not double standards. And every time a double standard is employed, they lose faith in the people employing it. What is your comment to them about one rule, the rule of law?
Great, great point. So we should be against violence no matter who's bringing it about. The truth of the matter is the state, the one thing that it's really fundamentally supposed to do is have a monopoly on violence in the public square to maintain order so Americans can fight out their differences with debates and with persuasion and with entrepreneurship. And so when you think, when we're angry because somebody is employing a double standard on the other side, the answer by us cannot be to say, yeah, well, since they did it, we're also going to have a double standard. It should be to reaffirm the standard, apply it to ourselves, and apply it to the other side. But if you believe in a principle, advance the principle. Your principle doesn't collapse just because somebody on the other side is unprincipled.
That is well said. And, Senator, I thank you for your time this morning. Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska, come back often.
Thank you.
That is an important conversation to have had, and we will post it so that people can reflect on it. Senator Sasse, one of the more thoughtful members of Congress. I put him up there with Tom Cotton. And, yes, Josh Hawley. Josh Hawley yesterday had his book deal canceled by Simon & Schuster, which is a type of cancellation culture. Senator Hawley, you may disagree with his bringing an objection. I did in the Washington Post before he did so. But he was following a well-trod path. It was a path that had been followed by Democrats, as Senator Cotton said yesterday. Only rarely, just every time a Republican's been elected in this millennium, 2004 and 2016, they followed the same path. And so what path was legitimate in 04 and 16 does not become illegitimate because it is being applied to the election where the Democrat won. And whether or not they were going to make false allegations was not at issue. Simon & Schuster was my most recent publisher, but I'm aghast by what they did. It is, again, the wokeism that Senator Sass just referred to. One standard. And if a publisher is going to cancel books under contract, they can choose not to produce a book, but to have a contract and to breach it is not a violation of the First Amendment because it's not state action, but it violates the spirit of the First Amendment, which is a full-throated debate about issues of great concern to the public square. And I'm shocked by what they did and have to consider whether or not Simon & Schuster authors should be welcome here. Don't want to punish them for what the publisher did, my publisher, my most recent publisher, great publisher. But it seems to me to be the kind of decision that the country is all too quick to make all too quickly on the basis of the echo chamber that is elite opinion generation within the Manhattan Beltway media elite and publishing elite with a little bit of Hollywood and a lot of Silicon Valley thrown in. And that is as aggravating of the situation we find ourselves in as President Trump's remarks on Twitter over the last 4 years. It has become an iterative cycle of condemnation, 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 with both sides addicted to division, as Senator Sass did, with very few calm and absolutely objective, one-standard commentators who pursue the same questions of every person, regardless of party or affiliation, with an opportunity for them to be heard at length and in a conversational style, which I believe we just did with Senator Sass. I believe that's the kind of interview that you will not hear on cable because producers and directors are in the ear of talent telling them to ask jab questions that might incite a viral moment. It's not how we do this show. It's never how we've done this show, not in 20 years. And it is, I believe, an example of how one ought to conduct the public conversation. And it's one from which media has greatly and injuriously to the public weal departed. And maybe they will get their bearings back. I don't know. The Sunday shows remain almost the last refuge of a serious conversation among policymakers and broadcast journalists. On the radio, there remain a lot of places where it happens. But increasingly, every single platform cannot attract guests from the other party. This is an island. We do get Democrats on here occasionally, whether it's former Secretary Clinton, former Secretary Kerry, Chris Coons, Angus King. They're always welcome. Democrats are always welcome here. Chris Christie will be along next hour. Peter Baker of the New York Times, Jonathan Swan of Axios. Don't go anywhere, America. You are listening to The Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start, so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. A 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384.